So as of course I let the kids know, we are in the midst of this wonderful creation season. And so we will be having some themes every Sunday through this month, and I will preach on that topic at some point, not today actually, but we also have some classes on creation care. So a lot of ways to engage with this. But as I mentioned, we are speaking a lot of animals, and this theme of the cat came up, which I was happy to hear meowing from inside the Acolyte closet, because I want to tell you a story about the Ashram cat. And the Ashram cat is a story written by Anthony DeMello. And this is what he writes. When the guru sat down to worship each evening, the Ashram cat would get in the way and distract the worshipers. So he ordered that the cat be tied up during evening worship over there on the side. After the guru, so this happened week after week. Every time they'd have worship, the cat was tied up. And when the guru died, the cat continued to be tied up during evening worship. And then when the cat died, they got another cat and brought that cat to the ashram just so the cat could be duly tied up during evening worship. Centuries later, learned treatises were written by the guru's disciples on the religious and liturgical significance of tying up a cat while worship is performed. Well, I think we Americans, certainly we Episcopalians, have our own ashram cats. Those cats sure are distracting. And they can keep us from our deeper purposes, I would say, not just in worship, but in life. And in our gospel story today in Mark, Jesus quotes the prophet Isaiah, and he describes the way that God looks on our hearts and sees the many ways we are distracted and focused on appearances or traditions that fall short of connecting us to what really matters. In the story, the religious leaders, of course, are criticizing Jesus. Nothing new there. This time, they're criticizing him and his followers for failing to follow a tradition of ritually washing their hands as they were eating. So because they didn't do that, of course, they said, "You have defiled hands." Now, this ritual was a long-standing ritual. It was tied to the kosher laws. But Jesus here is challenging them, and he quotes Isaiah and says, "This people honors me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me." In other words, their focus is all wrong. Their focus was what was happening outwardly, on the appearance of things. In this case, a ritual, a tradition. But their hearts weren't there, weren't in it, and far then from the point behind it. So like the ashram cat, the focus had gone far off base of the meaning and purpose. It had been lost. And like the people in both these stories, we too often focus so much on outward appearances of things. We work hard to maintain the facade for others, so hard that we might fail to recognize or focus on what really matters. Now, I once had a good-natured disagreement with a clergy colleague of mine, and it was quite a drawn-out debate lasting weeks about the timing of when the Paschal candle should be put away at the end of Easter season. And I made the case, very strongly, prayer book tradition, that it should stay out through Pentecost, the day of Pentecost. But he felt, being from England and thus being wrong, that they needed to put it away by the end of Eastertide, before Pentecost. So this went on for a while, and I will say I did win the argument, in case you were wondering. I won, but at one point during this long and drawn out back and forth, it did occur to me how unimportant this was. Like, Jesus doesn't care how long we leave that candle out. But I confess there are times when I've gotten thoroughly distracted by liturgical minutiae or even theological details that ultimately made no difference to anybody. we are easily distracted by non-essentials. Okay, so take, for example, in our culture, the American focus on our outward appearance. It turns out that on average, Americans spend nearly $250,000 on grooming and beauty products in our lifetimes. That's a chunk of change. It's over $300 a month on average. What about our time? There's a fascinating study called the American Time Use Survey. And they conduct this regularly, but this one studied the time habits of Americans in a whole variety of activities. They learned that Americans spend an average of 45 to 55 minutes, almost an hour, on grooming every day. And that doesn't take into account time at the gym or working on our homes or our cars or other things that maintain appearances to the outside world. But it's still a really significant amount of time every day. Now, guess how much time, on average, Americans spend on what they call spiritual or religious activities a day. The researchers found it was an average of 2 minutes to at most 15 minutes a day. Quite a contrast, right? And it seems, I think, to underscore maybe Jesus' point, it also begs the question, what if we spent more time on what really mattered, on cultivating our hearts, our intentions, and our lives to be in accord with God's will for us in the world? Less time worrying about the non-essentials of life, thereby freeing up a lot of time and energy for the more important things. One of the problems, I would say, on our over-focus on outward appearance or how things look to others is that we might fail to notice the more important aspect of our own characters, the truly beautiful things about ourselves that God has blessed us with in terms of our inner gifts and qualities that shine the light of Christ far more than any of these other things we're thinking about. Could it be that in our desperate focus to be perceived a certain way, or even just to be perceived like we have it all together, we've failed to notice or forgotten to utilize those deeper gifts that we have to offer the world? We can also make the mistake of doing the same thing in our dealings with others. What about those times when we've been so focused on the appearance or situation or the lives of others that we fail to see who they really are and fail to recognize the beauty and gifts that lie within them? We are quick to judge a book by its cover, to evaluate someone based on what we see most immediately. Now, it makes sense we do this. I mean, we are here in America bombarded all the times with images of what we should be, of what we should look like to the outside world, and we often buy into that. So let's just think a little bit about all the things our culture tells us with repeatedly that we need to be. Okay, we need to be thin, attractive, strong. We need to make good money, drive nice cars, have big homes. We need to own the right tech gadgets. We need to smell good. We need to wear the right clothes, oh, with colors that complement our skin tone. We need to have straight white teeth, lots of shiny thick hair, and of course, flawless skin. We should be married to somebody who's good looking and have 2.5 children and not have any real deficits, physically or mentally. So, you know, when we fall short of those expectations that are put on us, because, oh, we all do, we could feel less than. We can feel as though even our sense of value or purpose in life is diminished. But that isn't the way of Jesus or the invitation of the scriptures to see ourselves and our lives. Scripture invites us to let go of those concerns or let go of the other petty things that distract us so that we can focus on having a heart, as Jesus describes, as pure, that is filled with what James said in our reading, true religion. True religion is love of God and others to those in need, to living a life that is more than going through the motions. Now, I will say sometimes God uses things in our lives to get our attention. And sometimes a crisis is what can call our hearts back to what really matters. Last spring, some of you know I had breathing problems following an infection, and I ended up in the ER 3 times for it. After some initial tests were run, I was given just an interim, like temporary diagnosis that would need to be confirmed. And I was referred to a cardiologist and a pulmonologist for more tests. And what I didn't tell anybody at the time, only my closest family and friends knew, was that the interim and potential diagnosis that I'd been given was one of the worst possible. It was terminal. And if it had, in fact, been confirmed by the specialists, it meant I probably had only a few years left to live. And I had weeks of just waiting for specialists to get me into the calendar, to schedule the tests, and then to get all the test results back. And as you know, those of you who've waited, it's horrible, waiting and waiting for this information. In the midst of it, though, I saw real clearly how little so much of what I usually focused on mattered. That crisis had the effect of stripping away every single unnecessary distraction in my life. I was just throwing myself on the mercy of God. Now, fortunately, that diagnosis was clarified and overturned. The testing that was done when it was completed, the specialist said I was one of those fun mystery cases with an very unusual case of asthma and complicated by infection. Not all diagnoses are wrong. Sometimes we get the diagnosis, those scary diagnoses, and that's what we have to contend with. And when we are faced with that, and whenever we're faced with our mortality, what is truly important comes into sharp focus. There's an old Chinese saying, you can't measure the sea with a pot. We can't and shouldn't do that to ourselves either. The things we try to use to measure who we are, who God made us to be. Instead, we can return to the more pressing question about life that Jesus is inviting us to have. What is in my heart? In Jewish tradition, the heart is viewed as the seat of the will, not just the seat of emotions. In other words, we can choose, we can will our hearts to be in accord with God's will, with God's ways for our life. And then, when we do that, we can stop focusing on the non-essentials, on the appearances, on the cultural traditions. All those many ashram cats. And then, instead, align with God's will. And that is where our lives will have ultimate divine meaning and purpose. Thanks be to God.